SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to SiriusXM online, and at our website, stevebick.com. And if you were listening, I assume the case, they had the open mic, and I always do a little, little mic check, sometimes right on top of the opening. You would think after, I don't know, how many times have I plugged in this stuff that I would... that I would not mix up the two mic jacks and for the headsets. Yeah. So that's what you heard me doing. Seconds before we threw the switch. Well, they're going to throw the switch obviously Saturday on a big day here, and boy, the preparations are going on everywhere. There's the, there's the ambient sprucings and the all the nursery type the hedge trimmings and the beautification when it comes to flowers and such. One of the things that's kind of funny when you're at you're at a racetrack ahead of time, you see all that kind of those machinations, the Derby particularly. You go in, you come into Churchill. And it's going to be, boy, if you haven't been seeing the pictures of the construction, I'm just sort of blown away every time I see a picture of the, of the huge, expansive open area. And it's just has changed. I mean, the change is going to be, I think, really startling. I mean, for anybody that remembers the old building and, much like here, I was with John yesterday as we walked out, John Parada, and one of the conversation points about this newer version of Gulfstream has been that those that spent time here years ago, they miss the grass, the backyard and that side of the place. I had only ever been here for the 99 Breeders' Cup. So I know what they mean, and I certainly remember, the way the building, the way the building and the big grandstand, what it looked like and what it was, what it felt like. But I don't have that same, that same recollection and fondness in terms of, what it was like here. I understand those that sort of miss that because, when you come down to Florida, but that's changed. I mean, that part of it, and this being essentially a year-round facility, it's different. It's just different. So, the idea of a smaller building and certainly, any older racetrack that's refashioning, the work that's going to go into the, the reimagined Belmont Park is going to be, that'll be the template, I imagine, going forward about how to shift the giant grandstands. And there'll be, there will be a Santa Anita, certainly. I mean, that will have a, really, in a lot of ways, I guess, after Belmont, and of course Pimlico will be completely different. The new Laurel, keeping the fingers crossed that all gets done as hoped and as laid out. Ideally, we keep I guess the next chance to check in on that will be with Alan Foreman at Preakness time, but or maybe even we'll see Alan perhaps tonight. Let me transition from Saturday, which we've got plenty of time to talk about, and we'll focus, I think, most of the Pegasus card handicapping tomorrow. Today we will address Sam Houston. Nick Tamaro is going to join us in about 40 minutes, and it's just such a just such a agonizing discussion to have, frankly, given you know the situation involved here, and the fact that he got this nice card, and only people that are going to either attend or you know those betting at other facilities in Texas are going to get to you know partake from a gambling standpoint. You certainly can watch and enjoy it that way, but it's just hopefully this will be the only version of Houston Ladies Classic that has to go through this because frankly if this situation with the Texas Racing Commission and you know we understand Amy Cook's you know aggressive posture but you would think that there'd be a compromise or a happy median somewhere to work out, but not happening between now and Saturday, but we'll talk to Nick. And then in hour three, we'll talk to Vic Stauffer, and we'll go over the Southwest card. And the Southwest itself, as referenced yesterday with Sid, was very interesting. And you know, starting with the stretch outs, of Corona Bolt and Arabian Night. I mean, that's where this race starts, and then there's any number of stalkers and off-pace potentials that make this a very interesting edition of the Southwest. And, of course, for $750,000, it's supposed to be, right? It's supposed to be interesting. The rest of the card, quite nice, actually, at Oaklawn as well. I sometimes I go to print, and I'll print the stake sequence, but there's allowances on here. There's, obviously the other two stakes to deal with, the Martha Washington, which came up narrow, half a dozen. But then there's the start of the sprint run to the Count Fleet, and there's an open maiden group of three-year-olds going six. There's a dozen. That's a nice race, the seventh. And as mentioned, the King Cotton with Gunite, where he'll figure to be short-priced and tough. But Broberg brings back Flash of Mischief, who he's really done a tremendous job with, and shortening him up. He's two of his last three, the Vance and the Ring the Bell at Oaklawn and the Slop. But he really has done a great job with Flash of Mischief. Don't know if he's up to Gunite for Saturday, but haven't looked either yet at the morning lines. Did get published yesterday for here, so I that part of the conversation yesterday now filled in. There's also some other fun names and spots on the card, including the eighth race allowance. Anxious to see what Vic's thoughts are in here, because Barber Road for John Ortiz. Barber Road, second start of the meet and first start as a four-year-old. Another race day. It's the craziest thing ever, right? Every other horse lately, the last couple of days we've looked at, there's been a race day. The good group. D. Wayne's got that Ben Diesel as well, who's been trying to clear this this allowance level. The four-year-old Will Take Charge, and of course was part of the, was third in the Southwest last year, you might recall. So Ben Diesel, a four-year-old that probably some people have kind of forgotten about. So we'll look at Sam Houston and Oaklawn, so it's sort of a weekend preview light a little bit. And, of course, we've also got the Eclipse Awards tonight in West Palm. I had to go find myself a new tuxedo shirt. I wasn't happy with my old one. You know, it's funny. Every time, I don't know how many of us actually have regular functions, formal functions, but it does seem that every time you have a formal function, there's something that you have to go and you know, reorient, whether it's in this case, I needed a new tuxedo shirt. Sometimes you look at your bow ties and you think, there was one spread, there was a period between wearings where I used to have this one bow tie and cummerbund. Cummerbunds are, you know, they've disappeared from the seams, from the right. And nobody's wearing cummerbunds anymore. It is fun to say cummerbund. I had this one bow tie and cummerbund combo that was colorful, you know, but it was like it was I don't know. It had a Bonfire of the Vanities feel to it, you know, right out of Tom Wolfe's book. I wish I could find a picture of that. I don't think I've got. But I remember, you know, going through the. You know, there's also the drawer where you keep all that stuff. You keep your cufflinks, and your studs for the front of the shirt. That's another thing. The studs, you know, the black onyx, or mother of pearl, whatever, you know, preferred tuxedo stud that you that you've got. You go into your little, you know, your little jewelry box of those accessories, and somehow something's missing. Somehow either a cufflink has disappeared, or the stud. You've only got two studs and you need three, or you got three studs and you need four. It's invariable, because when I was leaving Tuesday afternoon, when I was packing, I'm going through and I've got, like, I don't know, I must have six of those boxes, and each one is like, oh my God. And I just kept, you know, then there's the stuff I took from my father, who among us did not have, you know, their dad's closet, that there'd be a couple of shoe boxes, right, with all this stuff. Ugh, unbelievable. And, you know, when you were a kid, you'd sneak into the closet and you'd go, look, you know, he had all kinds of goofy treasures, you know, pins and, you know, stuff from the Coast Guard. And, you know, when you're a kid, you think, oh, my God, this is so cool. You know, and then you inherit it, and you're in that position where you can't throw anything away either, right? Unbelievable. So I had to go run yesterday. I had to get a haircut too, because I was supposed to have a haircut yesterday in Bennington, in Vermont, my regular at the clip shop, and had to cancel because I made this late shift in tack and coming over here. So anyway, I was hustling around to be prepared, for tonight. So I'm looking forward to it. We'll go up. I guess it starts what? At 7:30, I think, is the start of the whole awards portion. I probably should look into this. It is on FanDuel TV, right? It's on FanDuel. I you know what? We'll talk to. Maybe we'll get a hold of Rooney, actually, wouldn't be bad. I see Tom Rooney. Rooney's probably got, you know, Rooney's got to have, he's got to have a whole section of his closet has got to be dedicated to formal attire. Pretty funny. I'm just looking here now at the sort of a press release. Okay, 7:30 is the start. 6:30, the red carpet. There's a lot of carpeting going on the next couple of days. You got, I think they got here. I think they've got a blue carpet. That's a whole thing here for Pegasus. And I would think at the Breakers, it's got to be a red carpet. I mentioned the other day, we went to the Breakers. I haven't been to the Breakers. I'm telling you. I was probably like high school, college. Yeah, it's got to be, it's got to be 40 years ago. But it's kind of a special atmosphere, special place. So it should be fun. It's kind of cool that, the Eclipse Awards have had, they've been you know, moved around. It's sort of like the Oscars, right? The Oscars, the Kodak Theater and the what was the Civic Auditorium? They've had a few different. There was a when you fly into L.A. There is a theater right there in. There's a theater Century? That is called the Academy Theater, and it was built with the idea that it was going to be the home of the Academy Awards, and it's got this neon signage, almost like a smokestack, and you go past the forum. Sometimes when you put on Waze and you're going to head toward Santa Anita and toward Pasadena, and I always come in at night, so it's all lit up. It is gorgeous. It's become a church now, but it is spectacular, and it spells out Academy. I'm sure I've got pictures and video. All right, Tom Law. In fact, speaking of Eclipse, let's get Tom Law's visit in here so that he can go about his day. Came down and Tom's being honored tonight, so it'll be fun to kind of start the morning with Tom Law. And I'm sure I sent you a congratulatory. Text, right, Tom?
Yo, how you doing?
I'm good. I sent you a congratulatory text, didn't I?
You got me. Sorry, I was having some technical difficulties here.
You have audio? You sound good. You sound
good.
You're good on our end.
It must be that Florida humidity. I'm good.
Are you not having? You're not hearing me clearly?
I can hear you. Yes.
All right, well, you're being honored tonight with an Eclipse Award, so congratulations.
Thank you very much, Steve. I appreciate it. It's been great fun. Yeah.
Unbelievable. What, Tom, the most important question is how much scurrying did you have to do? I just as part of the opening monologue, talked about having to arrange for a couple of missing pieces in the formal wear. How was your formal wear preparation?
I had to go. I wore a tux to a Christmas party. I think you and I talk about this. And like an idiot, I actually washed the tuxedo shirt with my laundry by mistake. And of course, it was a dry clean only shirt. So I ended up having to buy a new shirt. But I did get a shirt that actually fit a little bit better than the previous one. So maybe subconsciously I knew that shirt just was not going to look real good. So I got one that's a little bit looser and less revealing in the midsection area. For full disclosure.
Well, it's funny. I actually, that was my motivation yesterday too. because I was not happy when I packed on Tuesday. I was not happy with my tuxedo shirt. And I had a couple of them, and it's amazing that as few times as you wear these kinds of things, that somehow they look dingy. And it's bizarre. You wear them, you know, once every 3 years maybe, and the collar looks bad, the cuffs look terrible. It's like, what could have happened hanging in the closet that made it look like this? It's bizarre.
I know. And I haven't worn mine since 2019. I mean, aside from, or I guess I was here in 2020 in Florida. So, I mean, 3 years ago, but aside from wearing it to that crazy Christmas party that I went to. And yeah, you're right. It did look a little bit dingy. Thankfully, the black comes through a little bit better. So we can hide a lot with the black, you know? So here we go.
What about your accessories? In terms of tie? Are you know? There's been this movement away from just bow ties, and you know, there's now the black tie, you know, normal tie. And so I brought one of my black ties, and I also brought I've got a blush pink bow tie for a splash of color because I'd
go with that if I were you.
Yeah, I may.
Yeah. I go just the straight, regular bow tie. But it's funny that you say that there's kind of been a movement away from that. I used to actually, years ago, I would go with like the full black, you know, regular necktie. And I liked it. And then I would go to these things and I would be like the only one wearing it. Just because I'm not a huge bow tie fan. So I was like, I like the regular tie. I don't do a vest or anything, but I was like the only one doing it. So now I've gone back to the bow tie, I guess, because I didn't want to be my own man, I guess, which normally I am, but in this case I wasn't. So yeah, just straight standard bow tie, nothing fancy, no cummerbund or anything like that. So I won't be going back to my prom days at Saratoga High or anything like that.
Well, I addressed the cummerbund, the disappearance of the cummerbund, which is really a throwback item.
It is, isn't it? I mean, you never see anybody with them anymore. I don't think. I mean, I don't have any association with people going to the prom or whatever, so I don't know if kids wear them to the prom or anything anymore. But
I where I see them, the Shriners. They're big with the Shriners.
Oh, well, for sure. Well, they got the cool hats too, I mean, right? I mean, we need that. That would show up in that. That'd be something.
Well, you got to have the hat. That, and of course, now across Louisville, there's no bigger town, I think, for Shriners than Louisville. There's that great scene in Peggy Sue Got Married with her grandfather, and when he puts on the hat and Kathleen, what does she say? She says something, Grandpa, and she says, "Well, it wouldn't be a lodge without a funny hat."
Sweet reference. Yeah,
it's a tremendous picture. The I'm gonna refer to you for the for all the details. I what I'm seeing on the press notes, 6:30 arrivals for the red carpet, and then a 7:30 post time for activities.
I think it's cocktail hour or something at 5:30.
Holy
right?
cow! 5:30.
Yeah, I think so.
Oh my God, this is going to be like a Polish wedding.
And I think they're starting the. They're starting the program at 7 in terms of giving out the awards. I'm not really sure where actual dinner fits into that schedule. You know, I've been to these in the past where they've tried to do the salad while they're doing presentations and stuff. There's just clanking dishes and everything.
Yeah,
I know
it's tremendous.
They've had some you know, teeth gnashing over it in the past, and it's been like, why did we do that? And so I'm not exactly sure what they're going to do, but I think it's 5:30. Now you made me have to double check. So
I appreciate it. While you do that, I, you know, in terms of the dinner, I don't know if they're bringing in Pollo Tropical or, you know, how this will work. I know that they do have to start the ceremony with Earl Mack finishing his speech from last year.
I hope so. I hope so. I mean, I hope they don't cut anybody off. I've always been a big advocate of, you know, sort of try to read the room when you have someone, they hire someone basically to start playing music or whatever, and they're playing people off sometimes. I mean, I think you need to read the room. I'm on the steering committee, and I've made this comment a few times in the past. You know, like, don't cut the owner off or the breeder off or the trainer off. I mean, it's like, those are kind of the more of the marquee kind of awards, you know, and like, yeah. Same with the horse of the year. I mean, like, you don't want them going on and on and on, but, you know, just, you know, what's the rush? I feel like, you know, you came all this way to come to Florida. You came all this way to go to the event. What's the rush? You know, I mean,
that's true.
I don't think it's a really a made for TV type thing. I don't know that a lot of awards shows are. But you've invested the time to decide, you made the decision to tune in, you know, like, so I don't get all the complaints about like people complaining about the length of the ceremony or the format of it. You know what it is going in. It's basically the same every year. If you have a problem with it, don't watch. Just wait until later in the night and download the winners. You know? So, I don't know. I've always been, that's kind of my opinion on it.
And then of course, when it comes to the media awards, it's almost like one of those conveyor belts in the Jetsons, where you know, they put the five winners on there and they come across the stage. It's almost like it's a Small World After All ride at Disney World. Off you go.
They had us, and they've done this for the last several years. They had us pre-record some remarks. They'll play like a little montage, I guess. They'll kind of talk about who they are, and then they'll have you come up on the stage. So, I did my remarks from my office. I don't know, just right after the new year, maybe, or right around New Year's, I think.
You should have done it from one of those polar bear swims that you do.
I haven't done any of those yet. That's not a scratch I have yet. But I do know some people that I was reading an article yesterday about 25 things you can do like in the winter to like prove that you're really like a winter enthusiast. And I thought, am I a winter enthusiast? And I was reading through the things, and that was one of them. And I hardly do any of the things. So I'm not much of a winter enthusiast, despite I'll get out and do things in the winter. But I don't think I'm a winter enthusiast. But I wanted to do take my remarks like at the track, or I thought about going over to the Hall of Fame or doing it outside. And I just kind of, the week that I was supposed to do it, like the weather was really bad. It was one of those times in Saratoga where it was just kind of like cold and rainy before we got a little bit of snow recently. So it would have. I was thinking about calling Naira and see if I could go over to the track and do it like inside somewhere, but I didn't bother. I just went ahead and did it in my office.
Well, you should have done it the way you did it with me, but for the NTW, the Turf Riders Award, could have done it in front of Target.
There you go. That was great. Yeah, we met at Target like at Christmas time, right?
Yeah.
Hand off did the presentation very, very officially right there in Wilton. Every man's dream.
Does being a winter enthusiast, does my leaving upstate New York to come here for 2.5 weeks, does that qualify as a winter enthusiast?
Well, a different kind of winter enthusiast. I think you're definitely in the snowbird division of winter enthusiasts. If you're fortunate enough to come down here for 2.5 weeks, I stepped off the plane yesterday and it felt good to breathe in a little humid air. You know, I was telling somebody today how funny it is about humidity, and we're a little bit soft, I guess, in the Northeast, and we complain about humidity in the summer, but it's funny how much we like it when we're away from it for a while. It's been kind of so dry and, you know, winter-like up north. But stepping out into the warm weather last night was awesome. But no, I'm not sure you're ready for winter enthusiasts yet. I mean, there were a lot of crazy things on the list, like ice climbing and And I was just thinking, they shouldn't be recommending this to regular people. Like, they had pictures of it, and I was just like, this is a disaster. Like, I mean, as if some kind of rock climbing and hiking wasn't hard enough. Like, doing it on ice seems a whole nother level of crazy.
Nah, see, my winter enthusiast kind of thing is going up to Lake Placid,
yep.
You know, cocktails at the Mirror Lake Inn.
Yep.
You know, maybe the ECAC championships, assuming the Raiders make it. That, for me, that's winter enthusiasm.
That's pretty good for me. I like that. Mirror Lake Inn, can't beat it. Get a nice spot, look out at the, you know, frozen, snow-covered lake, and be good to go. Yeah, that's I'm all about that, for sure.
Tom Law joining us. He will be feted tonight along with, a lot of the winners. We know what to expect. There is some drama in certain spots.
Yeah.
We've gone over it enough. You know what you haven't done with us, Tom, and probably as good a setting for this as any. Some of your origins, and of course, I first became aware of you during Thoroughbred Times era. But talk about your writing career and the formative portion and who along the way, editors and other boosters along the way that that fueled your ardor for the game.
Yeah, well, I got my first job in '94 at the Saratogian, and Barbara Lombardo and was the managing editor there for a long time. And was kind of an early mentor. Rick Stevens was a guy that was one of my early sports editors. And I worked with a guy named Dan Raphael, and he ended up going to work for ESPN and USA Today and was a boxing writer. It was funny. He and I used to be, we were in our early 20s. We used to joke that I was into horse racing and he was into boxing. And we used to be like, Ed Schuyler was like our hero. He used to do like boxing and horse racing. And, we were like, it takes two of us to like kind of fill his shoes. And we kind of joked about, hopefully one day we'll make a career kind of doing what we want to do. Lo and behold, we ended up doing just that. Dan is obviously still working and still, a great boxing journalist, kind of a go-to boxing guy, all over the country and covers fights, like I guess as much as we cover horse races. I was there for about 4 years. Just kind of started part-time and then got full-time the last couple of years I was there, and got a job at Thoroughbred Times in 1998. I had been down, the Saratogian actually sent me to go cover the Kentucky Derby in 98. They were like, we think we want to send you. So like I was jumped at the chance. I went down there. I actually ran into a couple editors, John Sparkman being one.
Oh yeah.
And,
wow.
And Mark Simon, and Tom Lamara when he was at the, Thoroughbred Times at the time before he went to go work the Blood Horse. And, I had gotten to know them a little bit from when they came up to Saratoga during the summer to cover the sales and cover the round table. So I just happened to run into them at the very same time when someone had just left Thoroughbred Times, and they were looking to fill a staff writer position. The internet was still kind of relatively new at that point, so they were doing a lot of like website writing, and they needed a writer to do, to kind of cover the industry, cover racing, and do a little bit of everything. So packed up my Honda Civic in 1998 in August, right in the middle of the Saratoga meet. I remember I left the day that Awesome Again won the Whitney over Tail of the Cat. I remember leaving that day and made it down to Lexington, went to watch the Haskell, at the Keeneland simulcast. Coronado's Quest won the Haskell that day. And, from there, I ended up being a staff writer for a couple of years, then got promoted to deputy news editor, became news editor, and eventually became managing editor. All in all, I was there for about more than 14 years. Thoroughbred Times, of course, the parent company went bankrupt in the fall of 2012. And all along that time, I had gotten to be friends with Sean Clancy, and I were friends. I'd see him at the races. We'd talk all the time. He would always kind of like kid me and be like, man, you got to get out of the corner office there and get back to writing. Like, stop all this editing stuff. We want you to do some writing. He's like, why don't you just come to Saratoga and spend like a week with my brother and I? we're just getting this paper going called the Saratoga Special. I mean, it's like mid-2000s. So I'd always be like, someday, maybe someday I'll do it. That'd be a lot of fun, you know, someday. So it wasn't the first call I got, but one of the first calls I got when Thurber Times went out of business was from Sean. I was coaching soccer at the time in Lexington. I coached youth soccer for about 6 or 7 years. And I was right in the middle of coaching a game. And my phone rang. And it had happened that day. So my phone rang. I was like, I can't answer this call. I'm like right in the middle of the game. So then he called like 2 or 3 times. And then he's like, come on, man. But then he left a message and was like, hey, Tom, is today someday? So fast forward, you know, I was very blessed with a few opportunities when everything went bust, thanks to some great friends and colleagues that knew me, you know, that knew I needed work or, you know, wanted to help out. You know, one being Dave Joseph there at Gulfstream was a great friend at the time. Was like, I can't really give you a full-time job, but if you want to come down and work the meet, it'd be great, you know. I want to help you out if I can. And I really appreciated that. And there were others and there were some other opportunities. And I just kind of was like, well, wasn't sure what I was going to do. And then when I started thinking long and hard about the offer from Sean and Joe, I went and met with them at Fairhill. I met Joe. I knew Joe very little. Went and met with him in and around November, started with those guys in December. And that was December 2012. And ever since, they had just taken on the Mid-Atlantic Thoroughbred job to kind of produce the editorial. So they kind of needed somebody that maybe had some experience both when writing and in kind of, you know, magazine production, which I had just, you know, I had just done for several years. So that's how that all started. And since then, we've added a few different products. We've kind of, I think, improved, hopefully, the Saratoga Special, kind of ramped it up, increased the readership, you know, increased the revenue, and we've taken on other editorial projects. We do work for the New York Thoroughbred Breeders with their website, still doing that. And then we, like I've talked about on here before, we added the Horseman's Journal editorial product as well. We produce all the editorial for that quarterly publication for the National HVPA every this is the second year, and I'm already working on issue number 5, my 5th issue for the HJ. So looking forward to the year ahead, and you know, hopefully we can win some awards for one of those publications too.
Well, and then before we go, explain to everybody what was recognized, what work specifically.
Yeah, so the story that I won in the news enterprise category was for coverage of last year's Preakness Stakes, early voting, and kind of told the story from multiple different angles, you know, covering the horse winning, Jose Ortiz's early impressions of the horse, and had a great conversation with Jose after all the post-race interviews and stuff were done, walked back to the jocks room with them, got some great perspective, and I thought that's what really made the story. And then just kind of having written about Chad Brown and Clarvich Stable over the years, all their kind of their operation and how they do things, you know, I've written a lot about those two guys, you know, owner and trainer, winning races over the years at Saratoga and beyond. So I had a little bit of, you know, not inside knowledge, but just kind of know how Chad does things, you know, with young horses and giving them time and developing them. So I kind of weave that into the story too. So it's great when a race story wins. You know, there's a 3,000 word story, so it's kind of hard to go up against maybe shorter pieces that are a little more concise and a little more punchy. But you know, just thrilled and consider myself very fortunate to be able to win a second Eclipse Award in a different category. So it's very exciting.
Well, and as I said to Joe last week when we also touched on this, you know, the three-headed monster, piling them up between Joe and Sean and you. So well done.
Well, thank you. It's great. It's great to work with those guys. They encourage me and challenge me you know, as I not to spoil the soup, but they, I didn't say this on my thing, but they basically resurrected and sort of rescued my career, so to speak. You know, when I was, like Sean was saying, you got to get out of the editing, get out of the corner office, get back to writing. So I do a lot more writing now. I'm not sure if I'm a better writer or a better editor, but, you know, I like doing both. So they've given me that opportunity, and it's great.
Wow. Really a career in service to the game. And that, you know, very often and ideally is what, you know, what this kind of a function and these kinds of awards ideally are doing. Tom Law, we will see you this afternoon, this evening, and maybe tomorrow morning, the way this thing might, you know, press into past midnight, possibly.
Oh, no, I'm told no way. No way to press that. That's what I'm told, yeah. NTRA does not want it back, so.
These jokes write themselves. Tom.
It won't be because of me.
No. Well, I don't think Earl Mack's getting anything this year either. So I think we're safe.
Outstanding.
Saratoga TL, everybody. Tom Law and all the various outstanding publications that that Tom is contributing his talents to. Tommy, see you later.
Sounds good, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Not at all. A lot of fun. Tom Law, everybody. We're going to stay here. And the Horseman's Lounge being converted into a photography studio because Tyler Gaffleone is going to come by. We're expecting to corral him and harass him into a visit because why not? So not sure when he's due. But
what's supposed to be 10, so yeah.
10-ish? All right, that could actually work. So we'll see if meantime, let's get to Nick Tamaro and the difficulties obviously at SHRP with the Racing Commission and how they're choosing to address the HISA circumstances has left Sam Houston unable to participate from a simulcast standpoint. Nick, good morning.
Morning, Steve. How you doing?
I'm good. I thought we'd be well served to get this in today. You know, given that the races are very much worth discussing. Unfortunately, the vast majority of the audience won't be able to wager. Unless they've got friends in Texas that can maybe book their action, that's actually not a crazy idea. We might maybe start somebody in business.
Yeah, it could be a great time for a book runner. I joked about that before the meet. The likelihood of us getting to a carryover that's actually appealing the majority of the country is somewhat low. But yeah, good idea on your part to knock out the races that people can't actually bet on Thursday, so the Friday show could be about the ones that they can. But yeah, I mean, all kidding aside, it's a good trio of stakes races for open company runners. A couple of Texas bred races as well came up very good. Unfortunately, with the EHV situation at Gulfstream, we've had to exclude any shippers from Gulfstream, which will keep Mike Maker from sending anybody in and will keep him from winning the Connolly, which he has won, I believe, 9 times. So, but still, you know, the Houston Ladies Classic came up a really nice race with a lot of good representation.
Let's, do you want to work backwards from the Classic?
Sure, yeah. The Connolly goes as the 10th, and again, I mean, you can take out Canenos and Bay Street Money, as well as Maker's other horse in there. So that's kind of unfortunate because, you know, that was basically going to encompass the three favorites. So it'll adjust the race from a wagering perspective, but it still doesn't, you know, it doesn't terribly adversely affect the quote unquote star power that the race has. I'm negligent in that I'm just pulling out my racing form. Hang on one second.
Not a problem. And I'm glad you mentioned the Connolly goes as the 10th, the Ladies Classic as the 9th, and the mile, the Bob Bork goes as the 8th. Working backwards and the Groovy and then the Barrel Ass, the state brand.
Right. So now, you know, Spooky Channel was likely going to be the favorite. Amanda Connolly when all was said and done. He'll be a very solid favorite now. And credit to Jason Barkley, who claimed this veteran, and yep. and he's come back running. He's done well since he got claimed, winning the Elkhorn, and then obviously having a setback when he was training for this race last year. And I thought he ran very well in his comeback race at Fairgrounds, somewhat surprisingly so, given that, you know, Jason did not have very good numbers with horses off the bench. So he looks like a deserving favorite. Again, you can take out Bemis Boy, Canenos, and Bay Street Money. Another mystery who was in the dead heat last year is back in this field, and I think is a very dangerous horse as well. He'd be helped if there was a little bit of pace in front of him, which is still, you know, somewhat of a possibility. Not really like any of Maker's horses had a lot of early speed. Logical Miss should likely do the heavy lifting on the front end. So it's still an interesting race, you know, hopefully goes with the field of nine with just the exclusions from Maker's Barn. And I'll tell you, you know, the Houston Ladies Classic, where it has had a great deal of star power over the years, what it has lacked is depth. And that's one of the reasons why it has not been upgraded to a grade two. People, and this is a different conversation, but people often misunderstand that the reason why races don't get upgraded if it has one good winner is that the races need to have good also-rans as well. And this race has not, unfortunately. But this year, there's significantly more depth in that you have She Can't Sing coming off the Chalukyi win. You have Hidden Connection, who was a two-year-old graded stake winner. Pauline's Pearl obviously won this race last year and went on to win a grade one, becoming, I think, the fifth winner in 6 years that won a grade one the same year they won the Houston Ladies Classic. And then you have 63 Caliber, who looks like she could really be anything in terms of what kind of horse she could blossom into as a four-year-old filly. She capped her 2022 with a win in the Cumley, and that's been a springboard to this race in the past. We've seen a lot of horses come out of it and run well in the Houston Ladies Classic and go on to do some nice things. So very exciting to see her there. She's the daughter of Gunrunner out of the Nice Mare class of 63, who was owned by Lee Pacoic and trained by Gary Contessa, was actually adept on both turf and dirt, a little bit better on turf, but it seems like 63 Caliber's really found her home on the dirt. Kendra Carmouche, who interestingly 22 years ago rode as a bug boy at Sam Houston, is back in for the mount. Tom Amos is bringing her over. Pauline Pearl's coming back off the layoff. And, you know, quite honestly, Steve, as much as I rooted for her last year being a gigantic homer, I've never really warmed up to this horse. I've never really thought she was all that good, so to speak. And even though she won the La Troyenne over maybe a little bit of a washed up She Dares the Devil, her last two races of 2022 were really not particularly strong. And so it's a great opportunity for all the people out there who can't bet to bet against her. So those of us who can probably should. And but it'll be interesting to see if she's ready off the bench. And in Steve Asmussen, you trust to some extent on that. But as the favorite, I would definitely be willing to take her on.
She, you know who she reminds me of out of the same out of the Asmussen barn was she's a Julie. She's a
yeah,
Julie.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think on their best days, respectively, She's a Julie was probably a better horse. The difference, I think, is that Pauline's Pearl's been slightly more consistent. She's just one of those horses that she's run a couple of races that make you think, okay, well, you know, there's something there. She's all right. And then her last two races of last year, the Shawnee and then the Fleur-de-Lis, were just very mediocre. They were very dull. She didn't quite have the same tactical speed that she did when she won this race. And then she came back and ran a real cracker in the Azeri, finishing a good second behind Cece, blowing the brake and making a wide move. So, you know, it's one of those where if she had a run at, you know, Fairgrounds or somewhere in December and came back and knocked a little rust off, then you'd probably feel a little bit more confident. But this is a horse, I think, that you really, from a betting perspective, would have no interest in taking, you know, somewhere around 8-5 on. And I mean, it's very hard to predict what the odds are going to be in these races nowadays. But I mean, I imagine just with name recognition alone, she'll be a pretty solid favorite.
It's a nice, it really is a nice group. And if you're going to have seven, you know, to have all these stake winners assembled, you know, Brendan Walsh seems poised around, really around the country, you know, particularly down here for a potentially a big weekend. and that moon swag, you know, kind of looking to bust out on the graded stake front, has got listed, you know, won the Broussard, won the Spanky Broussard, and has got graded stake placements. But certainly she now has a 5-year-old. I wonder how far they want to go with her. If she's maybe ticketed for the shed, or if they're going to go on with her all year. I'll have to ask Brendan that question. But Olivia of the Desert, for those that didn't realize, now with Wayne Catalano, moved over from McPeak by Mrs. Moulton. She can't sing. Chris Block, who showing up in a lot of spots, and you mentioned Hidden Connection too, coming off of a nice allowance win at Fairgrounds for Brett Calhoun, who is absolutely having a terrific meet down there, but is we talked to what 2 weeks ago, and seems like he's poised for a good 2023 as well. All right, let's back it up into the mile and the Bob Bork.
Yeah, unfortunately, this is a race where Worthington will come out, being that he's stapled at Gulfstream. Yeah. But the principals are, and the winner is in Private Creed. You know, and the winner is was a good get for Sam Houston, given that he won a graded stake last year. And so this is a race that, you know, ultimately we'd love to see get graded. Bob Bork, of course, was a longtime general manager of Sam Houston that's still very, very well respected at the track. A number of employees still there, especially in executive roles that Bob hired and ushered along in their careers. And so it was great to have Dan Bork down last year to present the trophy. I hope he's able to come in again, given that Mrs. Bork still lives in the Houston area. So I strongly favor, and the winner is to Private Creed. I actually really liked Worthington in here. So I thought he was a great fit, and I thought he was coming out of a decidedly tougher race than pretty much everybody else. So it'll be interesting to see where Corey Lannery positions and the winner is early. There is a little bit of speed that looks unlikely to go the trip, and that should set things up relatively well. So it'll be a fun race. I'm glad that Mrs. Moulton, who is a Texas Thoroughbred Association board member, has got a couple of horses this year that came in, and great to have a guy like Wayne Catalano bring quality horses in as well.
It occurs to me, between the Bork Mile and the Steve Sexton Mile at Lone Star, kind of a nice, nice tributes that on both ends of the spectrum, the management spectrum in Texas. What do we got left? We got the two. We got the two sprints, right? Yeah.
Yeah, the couple of Texas bred races, you know, and I really hope that, without getting into any detail, because nobody out there wants to hear me babble on about it anymore. But, you know, I really hope anybody who is getting in the way and is inhibiting the growth of Texas racing would take a really hard look at this field and understand what the Texas bred program could become. A number of horses in here coming out of open company races where they've been competitive. And, you know, 5 years ago or so, Texas breds couldn't stand up in an open company race. But you see some of the names of the sires in these races. These are horses that are significantly more interesting than they've ever been before. The breeding program is really set to explode here, and it's not if we continue to have the impasse that we do. With that said, little sweet thing for Donnie Von Hemmel, who was not a fixture here, but somebody who regularly ran horses down in Houston, is bringing him in off of a couple of tries against open company, including the Springboard Mile. This is a son of Caleb's posse. You have Vietnam Victory, who has looked pretty solid, including winning a stake last year for Brett Calhoun, a son of Klimt, Guitar Boy for Ray Ashford, whose barn has gotten very hot of late. And he, of course, trains Wild Atlantic Storm, who hopefully will get healthy and get back on the Derby trail again soon. Bling, Bling, Bling won a division of a Texas Stallion stake here at Sam Houston on opening weekend. He's a horse with a lot of speed. He'll try and book it from the rail. So really a terrific race. I mean, the field came up big, and this is a race that's been repositioned on the calendar off of Texas Champions Day so that it could be run here and support some of these races with a guaranteed purse. The Philly race is not quite as strong, the bar alas, but it's not bad at all. Blushing Bell comes in for Alan Love, who's had a couple of wins with horses that he had up in the summer at Horseshoe Indianapolis. You also have Stelliot's Legacy, who won a division of the Texas Stallion Stakes as well back on opening weekend. Waving By, who I thought ran very well in there also, and is maybe worthy of a little bit of consideration. Same with Is It Tis. I made Fast Track the morning line favorite for Steve Asmussen. This is a filly that has shown plenty of ability as well. This barn obviously is always pretty heavily backed at the windows also. So it came up a really fun race. We've got a pretty decent number of entries into our contest and NHC qualifier for either this year or next year. So glad to have some of the players from around the country come in and get involved. And look, I mean, we really appreciate any support we can get. Obviously, it's a less than ideal situation, but you know, we're trying to make lemonade out of lemons, and it's a big, big pile of lemons right now.
Let me mention in that barrel, ass, how's George Bryant doing?
George Bryant, my friend Mike Steinler, who is a friend of George's, said that he was in the hospital last week getting some treatment, but was in good spirits. He's been tweeting. He tweeted a picture of Sky Tizzy yesterday, who looks phenomenal in her stall, dappled out. And, you know, I think everybody, if she's in contention turning for home, everybody who knows George will be rooting for Sky Tizzy, who is, by all means, was a very impressive maiden winner on opening day.
Yeah.
And really has a look in this race because she's going to get a pace to run out as well.
I appreciate that. And best wishes for George going forward, health-wise. The Houston Ladies Classic, and so much work, and frankly, we've chronicled this effort at Sam Houston Race Park for over a decade, and things right now a little precarious, but we'll hope that precariousness is just short-lived. Nick, let me, don't know tomorrow if how we'll lay out schedule wise. Any thoughts about what's going on down here? You got a Pegasus approach?
I've kind of done just some preliminary work. I was going to finish it off today, but it looks like a really fun race. I mean, it looks like an honestly run race with a lot of speed. I think Defunded will go out there, and Cyberknife will be somewhat close. So I'm a little intrigued by the local horses. I thought the House Hope was a very good race and a very potentially telling race in terms of, or maybe it was the Harlan's Holiday. I don't have my racing form.
Harlan's Holiday.
But Harlan's Holiday, yeah. So I think that race could be a good indicator of what could happen here. So I'm interested in some of the horses coming out of there, including Skippy Longstocking. White Abario is obviously very dangerous as well. He's probably a slightly different horse at Gulfstream than anywhere else. And he rates to get a very good trip sitting just off the pace. So I'm excited. You know, there's not as much star power as there's been in the past, but of course what that leads to is a far more interesting betting race.
Well, exactly. And it, you know, for a good portion of its existence, it's been sort of this, you know, we called it yesterday a coda to, you know, some Breeders' Cup Classic champion, you know, to their career, essentially. And in this particular case, it's more a kind of a general handicap division, you know, kickoff, and good. Got an interesting assortment of horses. Yes, Art Collector and Cyberknife are going to leave the stage, but you know, particularly when it comes to the 4 year olds. And you know, Simplification and White Abario and Skippy, you know, they're taking ideally you know, next steps going forward as older horses. And then even the older horse that caught my eye, Nick, that is going to be a number, is Get Her Number, the Gary Barber, Peter Miller. I think this horse is exceedingly dangerous in here.
Yeah, the worry, of course, is the distance, right? I mean, you're not entirely convinced that this is a horse who wants to go a mile and an eighth, but I wasn't entirely convinced he wanted to go a mile last time, and he ran very well. So I think you have to take him seriously. You know, it's just that kind of race. I mean, it's been, I don't think we've ever talked about a Pegasus where there's truly five or six legitimate win candidates. And usually there's been one, maybe two.
Right.
So it makes for a very fun race and a good opportunity there. So, yeah, I'm very much looking forward to seeing how it all shakes out. And the people who play in our contest at Sam Houston, if you're listening by some chance and you're on the fence about coming down to H-Town, come on, because the Pegasus World Cup is included in the contest. And so there'll be one race at least where the win pool might actually reach five figures.
Very cool. The one participant I thought you might have that I put the bug in his ear for the champ, for Baychik to come to the contest. And then what does he do? He up and gets his NHC seat last weekend, so he doesn't have to come to Texas.
Well, there you go. It's unfortunately, we would have loved to have him. We have a Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge champion coming in 2020, winner Marshall Graham. So everybody can target 10 Strike Racing's Marshall Graham as the one that they want to beat.
Well, big problem, because I was very secretly, quietly, because Baychik was coming to Vegas, win or lose, I was kind of quietly hoping he'd be on hand, to do some co-hosting. So instead, we'll just have to, draft him here and there.
That's actually a tougher spot for you, because I know Fornatel has done it a little bit in the past, but he's going to go to Cheltenham.
Well, there you go.
So,
there you go.
We will find someone. And don't worry. I mean, by Sunday, I won't be in contention, so I'll sit over there for a while.
You say that every year, and then boom, what'll happen? You'll run the table, and
I'm hopeful. So my only angle this year is that the only NHC I've cashed in, Travis Stone was playing as well, and Travis is back for 2023.
That's
so
true. That's
that
true.
That might be the angle. We have a boatload at my table. It is it's more people qualified than we've ever had before. Marshall, me, Jack, Travis, Philly Joe. Yeah, that's a boatload. That's five.
That's the six horsemen of the apocalypse.
You throw in Pat Cummings, who's there as a cheerleader.
And boy, does he look good with pom poms! That's quite something. By the way, a belated happy birthday to the voice of Churchill Downs. Travis, was it yesterday or the day before? I think.
Yeah, Monday.
Monday, thank you.
Yeah, he needs a reminder that he's getting old. So,
well, certainly hairline.
He was ancient from the start.
Exactly.
I'm going the wrong direction too, but yeah, Travis was quick to being a little skinny.
Oh my gosh, it's very funny. Nick, maybe we will get a slip in a couple of opinions tomorrow. It's Toboggan Day at where Drafted is going to try to win again at the age of 9. So maybe we'll get a couple of other opinions in tomorrow.
As long as he doesn't have to worry about Pai Omai and the toboggan, he's in good shape.
Nick Tamaro, everybody, NTAM 1215 SHRP, Sam Houston Race Park, and let's support them any way we can. Thanks, Nick.
You bet. Thanks, buddy. Talk to you tomorrow.
Nick Tamaro, folks. Let's sort of head, I think, right, Case? Let's head to the break. It's 10:02. They're getting ready here for a Tyler Gaffney-owned visit. I guess they're going to put... For the broadcast, I guess they're putting the helmet cam on Tyler. So they're doing some publicity type shots here, and then I will harass him into a visit. Tony Black's going to join us, and we're going to sadly have to revisit the tragedy from Tampa Saturday. It's unbelievable that talk about it again, but any such occasion. But I did want Tony to talk about what it's like for the exercise community. Because it's not a, certainly from a lucrative standpoint, I mean, it's not when you're young, it's one thing, I suppose, to make a living that way, working hopefully toward assignments in the afternoon, but... invariably, it seems, the exercise riders out there, either a little too tall, a little too heavy, can't get, down the weight. And, people say, oh, they should raise the weight scale for jocks. Well, all that provides is a framework where riders that are then at the next weight level, let's say you add, 8 to 10 pounds. Well, all of a sudden, now you've got guys that are, and gals that are 135 trying to get down to 125. You're not changing the equation at all. Probably a good question to ask Tony about an exercise rider maybe that they've seen over the years that would have been, you know, had they been more of a natural, just more of a natural lightweight or not as tall, that kind of thing, would have been, you know, a great race rider. So I'm going to ask Tony that question. I don't think I've ever been, that's never been asked. Yesterday, a couple of quick notes. Yesterday, Seth was not able to duplicate. Sorry, but yesterday I was watching along, unable to duplicate last week's success. Got a couple too many fourths and fifths. The sale wrapped up strong. Very good. Two good days of horse sale at Ocala. Now we turn toward phasing to their swing at the winter bloodstock distribution. It's always a good sale, too. Phasing. Take a break. We're live at Gulfstream. Tony Black in. We're going to see Tyler Gaffney here in a little bit. Vic Stoffer and more. Dave Hill for NFL Action 2.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take